Hello to you, beloved listener. This is Jan. I am currently recording this introduction in the south of France, my beloved Provence, where the sun is shining on my face, far away from my adopted Glasgow in Scotland. Today, we're talking about an unlikely friendship of Don Shirley and Tony Lip Vallelonga, who also are going south, but south of the US at a time where segregation was still in place. You've got different ways to treat race in filmmaking, and we thought that it was a interesting way and probably the way you should do it instead of shouting and insulting people every day. Even though we are aware of the controversies concerning this film, we thought it's clearly worth your time watching this one. So now is the episode. As always, you can support us on Patreon. So that's patreon.goodbadstandardpodcast.com. And that will be a direct transfer to our Patreon page. Thank you again. Hello, everyone.
Hi, hello, guys.
Today is another proof that we can't have nice things. In case it wasn't clear, the film we're about to talk about, Green Book, is not a biopic of Donald Wallbridge Shirley. The film dramatizes the events that happened between Tony Lip Vallelonga and Donald Wallbridge Shirley during a musical tour in the Deep South of the US in the 60s. So definitely not a white man being the protagonist in a black man's movie. The screenwriter is Nick Vallelonga, the protagonist's son. So we got that side of the story. So Green Book, can you read that?
Eine besondere Freundschaft. I think that's a wonderful friendship.
Yes, yes. And you've got the same kind of added stuff in the French one, which is focused actually on the trip, sur le bord des routes, like on the side of the roads kind of thing.
Okay.
And in Argentina, it's una amistad sin fronteras. So it's more focused on a friendship than on individual people, even though it's actually, it's Tony Lip's journey. But yeah, the title of the book refers to a segregation era travel guide founded by Victor H. Green and published yearly between 1936 and 1966.
Jeez.
Ah, yearly.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I mean, that would, of course, that would change. Yeah. Gosh, it's like a racist Guinness Book of World Record.
How well, awful. Or like how, you know, you get like Lonely Planet, I think is the one I've seen for like traveling. Like if you go to a city, mm-hmm. like the company that used to make books or even like AA roadmaps or whatever, like companies that do produce, even nowadays in the world where a lot of stuff is online. I mean, when I go to certain cities, I'll use City Mapper, for example, which will give me directions, but yeah. It won't necessarily tell me like things to do, which what this book, the Green Book, is.
Well, what the only thing that you can do if you're black and in Southern America, I shouldn't say South America, Southern America.
So I went to see this. It was actually the 10th Secret Unlimited film of the year last year. And as it was around the time that other of very high profile movies were expected, people never know. So at least three people, when they saw that it was not the movie they were expecting, they just left.
Oh, really?
I told that story with a Nosferatu. It sounds a bit like that, doesn't it? You know, you don't know what it is and then you're just bitterly disappointed. Although they've missed out on a good film, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was good. Depends on what genre of film you like to watch, but that's sad that people feel like they have to walk out of a film, like they have vehement feelings about certain films that they can't even watch it.
Well, I mean, it was probably more the aspect of like, well, I can talk from experience, you know, thinking I was going to see The 400 Blows and instead I saw Wang and a Fly.
Yeah,
which is the running joke this year, by the way, because I've mentioned it in about every episode. It's not even out yet.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's a running joke this year.
And even more of a joke is I actually watched it, and it's what people refer to it because it's actually the very first film in the Nouvelle Vague, the New Wave, from François Truffaut. So I think it's probably only because of this, because I watched it, and it's kind of a toned down version of Rebel Without a Cause.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was made at 3 years after Rebel Without a Cause.
400 Blows, yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure what you mean by this is a black man's story. And so are you saying that Mahershala Ali should have been the protagonist?
No, it's not me. It's the... So every year when the Oscars are coming, you've got campaigns to get the movie Oscars, and you've got campaign to bring the movies down in flames.
Right.
The actual brothers of Don Shirley complained, and Mahershala Ali actually apologized because he didn't have all the elements. And that's what everyone is saying about this film.
Okay. I totally disagree with those people. I don't think that this... Because, I don't know. I think that it was really nice as well to see a black man in a Hollywood film that is coming up toward Oscar season being as refined and distinguished and intelligent as he is. Like, I don't think there was any stereotypical... And of course, that's what the film is about, that I'm not a stereotype of a white man because I'm not white, but I'm also not a black man, so who the hell am I?
Mm.
Which I think is the most incredible thing to say in a film that's being put up for Oscars, because that is probably the feeling of anyone who is mixed race or brought up in a country where their parents aren't from. It's like, where do I get kind of fit into the world? So I see what they're saying, because it's like, this is about a black man and then you're putting a white... you're making it about a white man, right? But then again, like, Italian immigrants weren't treated great either. Not saying they're treated the same, but you know what I mean.
I think as well, I've seen a lot of people refer to this movie as reverse Driving Miss Daisy, which is... I mean, I wish we didn't live in a world where if a film has a similar... Just because you've got somebody driving somebody in a car that's, you know... Instead of Morgan Freeman driving another person.
Well, that's problematic, because wasn't that the problem? That as soon as they go in the South, the people in the other cars are looking at them funny, because it's like, shouldn't it be the other way around? And police officers saying, why are you driving him? Like, outwardly, like, not even keeping it in your mind because you're embarrassed. Like, very outward racism. Mm.
Peter Farrelly, one of the famous brothers who... they did There's Something About Mary and all this nice comedy. So one of the brothers, Peter, directed this.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, yes. I got to say that it takes a time to get... you used to see the guy... You used to see Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn or... Mm. Like, and to see him like this is a bit... takes a bit of adjustment to...
Yeah. I think there were moments where I was like, that Italian accent, it just feels so different. And there were moments where I was like, that was quite strong. Like, would people really sound like that? And
he's a very committed actor. We'll go in deeper when we talk about Lord of the Rings at some point, about how he links to a character or finds his way in. There's a story to do with Lord of the Rings where he used one of the props as his way in. So he always gives... He always tries to find a way to bring himself and, like, you know, meet in the middle with everything. And the word that springs to mind is he's a very committed actor. Commits to everything, like, full pelt. Because whenever you see him in a role, he's always different in a degree, because I can remember him in The Road, which is a really dark and depressing and very odd movie, in a sense of, like, a 28 Days or a Book of Eli sort of vibe going on. And then to see him in this, which is his character is very, you know, comic relief, lighthearted, but with a serious tone to him too. Like, it's rather interesting, actually. And I think Viggo Mortensen's a great casting for it.
This is based on Tony Lip, who actually was a bouncer at the Copacabana and was an Italian man brought up in the Bronx. And so, yeah, that would have also, and it probably shows as well the kind of prejudices that Italian immigrants had at that point. This was 1962. Dolores, Tony's wife, has a problem in her kitchen, and she's got two black workers there. Tony comes back into the kitchen and throws away the cups that they were using. Like, that is entrenched racism, man. Mm. Oh my goodness. Like, you can't even keep the cups that they touched and drank from. I thought that was also a really nice, subtle way of like showing Tony Lip's character, because it wasn't like, oh, by the way, this guy is racist. It was like a really different way of showing the audience.
It's well dramatized, and that's think that people are not really understanding, those who say again that it's basically that the truth is that actually they were never friends, and Tony in the eyes of Don Shirley was always just an employee and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Well, maybe, but that's not what the movie is about.
No.
Also, that
they change each other, don't they?
Isn't that not true? Because it says at the end of the movie they continued to be friends until they died months apart of each other in 2013.
Yeah, after this, though, I think Jan meant that they weren't friends before he brought them on the job.
Yeah, no, the family says that they actually never were friends. The relationship was just employee-employer.
Hmm.
Ah, okay. So the film totally got it wrong.
But I mean, okay. it's always, the thing is, the always the, just like the, just like I, Tanya. It's just, there are two sides of the story.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So we got, but what I understood is that the son, Nick Vallelonga, had plenty of recordings from both.
Yeah.
That's why I understood, for sure from his dad, but apparently also from, he had the clearance to do the movie after Don Shirley's death, for sure. You can do that, your film, but after I'm gone. But
oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. But true events, it's you always have to dramatize. Well, they had a message, and the message is good, I think.
Yeah.
Rather than I sneakily veered into that territory a few times in the episodes, rather than just always sticking a label, white, black man. If when it's people and you evolve, the guy starts being blatantly racist with the glasses and then the wallet on the windshield.
Yes, yes.
And gradually he just realizes that they are both human beings, and that's I think the way to do it, instead of continue to send oil in a boiling pan kind of
it's all about preaching, right? Like, if you want to tick a box, it's very obvious for an audience to watch and be like, you're just doing this for a trend, which is fine, but also that's problematic, because when that trend is over, then what do we do? Like, you kind of have to fight for the same thing. It's the same, like, we're having this problem with women in film. We don't want it. No, I'm kidding. Just this, like, box ticking. But then again, you have to start somewhere. So I think it's a weird balance that we have to get. Like, sometimes, you know, you take what you've got. We're kind of working on it, the kind of equality in film, right? Like, it's always hard to change things. People don't like change. And so you have to sometimes do the things you do.
Yeah, because I was thinking recently, I was like, isn't The Hurt Locker the last time a woman won for Best Director? Which definitely was, I remember, because...
Yeah, then, yeah.
Because there was a conversation, the conversation this year, because this is accurate, because it's part of our, for audio listeners, I'm looking up the Hurt Locker, the details for that.
Catherine Bigelow, I think that was the name, or Bigelow.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but that might be the last time there was a female one. I can't remember if she won director or if she won, best film, I know that, but I don't remember if she won directing. That's what I'm trying to clarify.
I think you have to be careful with that, because there are lots of people that if they see a woman in like the protagonist role, or it's about black people and their stuff and their etc., people will use that and say like, oh, look, this is a box ticking thing, like they're just doing it because it's a trend, and actually it's just a film. that like showing people and the what they went through, because we have never seen those stories before.
So it depends heavily on the voters, because plenty of films are snubbed. You know, the two current ones, there is one is Destroyer and the other one, I don't remember, were the two beautiful actresses in the US and they were like made less beautiful. There's a Nicole Kidman and I don't remember.
It did. It won Best Director and Best Picture. So she did win Best Director.
Yeah.
In 2010.
Right. So it's 9 years ago.
9 years ago. The conversation this year is a lot about, after last year, there was a lot of the Time Up movement. There's no real movement forward.
It's also just celebrate the people around you. So, you know, now you, and this wasn't always, every time a photo is put up, they will credit the photographer, they'll credit the makeup artist, they'll credit the dress, the shoes that they're wearing, the jewelry on Instagram, like on social media. That wasn't always the case. Like I specifically remember actors wouldn't put up who was involved in the process. And I think that's a really important thing, because you do realize that there are women everywhere, but they just might be behind the scenes and they should be as celebrated as anyone else, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that is an amazing movement towards good. I don't agree with this is a black man's story, so why is Viggo Mortensen telling it? Because actually I think Mahershala Ali had an amazing role. He did so well. It was so beautifully acted. Especially because, you know, when you watch a clip of something and it doesn't show you the feelings that you got from a film, actually, he somehow is able to show it in every single sentence that he does. And I think that's incredible acting, especially if you're doing it on the standpoint of, he could have made this really monotone, very boring, because I'm distinguished. And I'm a classical pianist and I speak like this. But he put so much heart and passion into it that somehow it wasn't boring. It wasn't monotone. It wasn't samey. And that's skill, man. So I feel like you need to focus on the actual performance rather than, I don't know, that sometimes I think it's problematic to make it immediately about, oh, this is a trend. Why are you pandering to the leftist? Whatever, you know. I think that's sad because this film is amazing. Like I actually want to go see it again.
A film exists on its own merits, right?
I feel like yes. Sometimes I do see that. Yes, it is problematic. Sometimes you're like, oh, for God's sake, like you're just pandering, and you know that the director and the people involved are just want to get the money back. But I think that that's with everything. That doesn't need to be about people of color and women and, you know, because it's our whatever, a trend. This can happen anytime. Like Hollywood is full of these films. So the fact that we're attacking on it now is interesting. And I think that the reason why we're attacking on it now is because we don't like change. Anyway, we're going off topic. I mean, we're not, but we can talk about the film.
There was the thing that it is in the trailer, the chicken wings.
The hilarious thing is that they made that so much better as well, because when he goes to is it the first dinner that he has in the Deep South?
It's one of them for sure, yeah.
And he actually, the sentence is, we asked the help what you guys like to eat. And so, and then they open up like a conch?
No, it's not a cloche.
It's not a cloche.
Because the cloche is this the one that you pull off. It's like a hostess sort of trolley thing, you know?
Yeah. But also they come in with platters as well. So the whole table gets to eat this delicious food that is, you know, usually only meant for people of color. Like it was just, like I think all three of us just hands to mouth, like, oh my, I cannot believe that this is a thing. We asked the help what you people eat. Shocking. But this is the thing, this is the amazing, the nice ways of showing what life actually probably was like.
And you can see immediately how the relationship is working on the wing thing that is actually in the trailer on the road. So there's the bones, and then Tony's all happy with the whole thing and just throws out the drink.
Also, it's funny how you look at context of trailers. Funnily enough, I know Jan avoids trailer. I saw the trailer for this and it made me want to go and watch the film, which was an interesting experience.
We were in the cinema, though, to be fair, so...
Yeah, that's true.
It's hard to watch trailers.
And in the trailer, the context of that scene is they're just in the car having fried chicken. The context of the movie, they arrive in Kentucky, to which Tony's like, huh, Kentucky Fried Chicken in Kentucky. When's that going to happen again? So he immediately drives off to KFC because he sees the billboard.
This is before KFC is KFC.
Yeah, before chains are a thing.
Conglomerate. Yeah.
And then it evolves from that, his excitement of having this food. He's like, you got to try this. It's great. It's Kentucky Fried Chicken in Kentucky. And then it evolves. It's like, I've never had fried chicken. He's like, what?
Yeah.
And then it becomes that conversation about, oh, that's what you people eat.
Well, that's where the conversation that I brought up before comes, because it really nicely actually is slightly jelly beaning over in this film.
Yeah.
Because you have that fried chicken, then you have the Deep South dinner where they make fried chicken for him because he's the guest of honor and that's all he eats, right? And then, of course, he brings it up saying, why do you take it? Why do you take all this abuse? Like, if someone spoke to me like that, and he does, he decks a police officer, Tony Lip, because he says, oh, now I know why you're driving him, because you're pretty much something like that. You're pretty much at the same league anyway. And he punches him. Mm. But
there is the jade that is also jelly beaning.
Oh, the stone.
Beautiful. Yeah. Mm. And it's also interesting as a British person, I think, to watch it, because we don't know a lot about the Italian experience of coming over to America, because we didn't have that. It's also interesting to see how different countries have their subcultures and immigrants. And
Glasgow kind of had an Italian thing during the Second World War. There's a play, I can't remember the name of it, off the top of my head. I'll link it in the end of the episode, that I did at high school. It's about a family that comes over that's Italian, and the relationship, she goes, there's a daughter and a Scottish boy, and they have a relationship, and then she goes back to Italy later on. Anyway, so in history, we did have a tiny bit of Italian migration.
Yeah.
But America definitely, because it was and after the war, and, you know, even before, you know, when it was becoming the land of the opportunity.
Sure, sure. You know, so. Yeah. And it's bigger as well. So I'm sure that there was, but, so it was interesting to see how, I think this police officer said, like, oh, you're not really white then, something like that. And there's that kind of, even Tony Lip says that himself, like, I'm more black than you because I like fried chicken and I'm broke and you're on your throne and you're rich and you're working with the elite and you're pretty much surrounded by white people all day, etc. And I'm more black because I have a community and I'm broke all the time and I work from paycheck to paycheck, etc. And that's when Don Shirley says, well, if I'm not white and if I'm not black, then what the fuck am I? Which really got me, because it was like, well, yeah. Because I honestly, when Tony Lip, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Speaks, I actually didn't know the answer to that question, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know what he would say, because I was like, well, yeah, you're kind of right. Like, what? He does have like a struggle as well. So what are you going to say to that? And then he comes up with that and you're like, yeah, it's true. He's totally alone because he doesn't fit in anywhere.
I quite like this in this film. It's clear when we get to the relation, the term buddy comedy, you know, like two people that won't get along, you know, the two worlds collide and then somehow they work it out together, is a story well told. But I like how they mix the two worlds completely different and the idea of two different minorities, you know, in America for sure, and, you know, two different races together.
Yeah.
And you look at it through that lens and their relationship becomes, in the film sense, there's no real difference between the two of them except maybe class by the end of it, you know, and even then they have this real relationship with each other, and you buy it, you buy into it as an audience, and contrast with a world that doesn't fully accept Tony and does not accept Dawn Shirley at all, to a degree. I mean, some of the good scenes in this film are the outhouse scene is particularly a standout moment for me.
It actually shocked me because so this is the scene where Don Shirley wants to use the bathroom and he isn't allowed to because he has to use the, I mean, what would you call it?
It would be called
an outhouse. Yeah. Outside.
Shed.
A shed.
Yeah.
It's literally like
a hole in the ground.
It looks like the one in Shrek. Okay.
Donkey.
Like, not to bastardize the situation, but it does look like the one in Shrek. Anyway. But also the vehemence of this, the white guy, because it's his house, of like, I am not allowing you to use this bathroom, like, not even one person. And it's like this ingrained thing of like, it doesn't matter if you've just been at my house, you've been shaking hands, you've been eating our food, like, we think you're this amazing, intelligent person, but do not use the same facilities as us because you are not really human.
It's not, it's even separate. It's even more in that sense. It's like, you're our distinguished guest, but at the end of the day, you're still staff to us. You're only here to entertain us. We're not inviting you into our house to socialize and you play the piano and whatever. You are here performing a service for us.
Yeah.
And we are superior to you.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but that kind of way to get a message through is way more effective than bombarding you all day, like, you're a racist and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When we do at last our Would You Watch the Rest spin-off podcast, we'll watch the Quantum Leap. There is an episode called The Color of Truth, which is in those times in the US, and we'll also watch the Doctor Who Rosa,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see that's also a huge difference in how we do things these days, preaching and all pandering to all those people that you don't want to pander because they are loud, but they don't buy the tickets anyway. So
mm-hmm.
The word pandering, I don't know. I mean, sometimes we say pandering when it's poor storytelling. You know, when a film or a TV series or a piece of media or even literature has an idea, but the filmmaker or whoever's in charge of giving us that piece of information doesn't necessarily handle it in the way that we think is the best, i.e. giving it to us, I think the word pandering comes out, because it's the easiest way to tell somebody something is to just tell them stuff. It's like, all right, let's say Anouk, I'm going to give you a piece of toast. Like, Anouk, I'm going to make you a piece of toast.
Hmm.
Or a way of showing I gave you a piece of toast is like, I say, how was your toast? That's kind of pandering in that sense of poor storytelling.
Or I
arrive with a toast. Or right. Or better, what you see, you hear, and you again, this goes back to a conversation we had the other day about seeing with Roma, about how what's his name? I've forgotten off the top of my head. The director of Roma.
Alfonso Cuarón.
How he must have imagined shots from his past. I'm imagining serving you like toast. So you it'd be you asleep in bed, really tired. And then you'd hear like the ping of the toaster.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the plate would go down at the side. And then you would know you brought her toast.
Right.
Without having to show me bringing you toast.
So you're saying that there are some films that it's just to get bums on seats, really, but they don't actually think about progress society anymore or allow people to learn from watching this or make it an experience and a storytelling experience rather than just making you know what people are really into right now? Women. Let's put a female protagonist in.
That's pandering. Yes, that's absolutely pandering. I mean, probably what I'm trying to argue is pandering when it's unfortunately bad storytelling. Like, there are sometimes interesting ideas that aren't very well executed. And we've seen films and we will continue to see films that have ideas that aren't well executed. Look at The Illusionist for my example of how something wasn't executed well enough, in my opinion.
A vegan movie.
Or a vegan
movie. Yeah, no stakes.
No stakes. You know, it's sad when pandering for pandering's sake, i.e. this is a popular issue, catchphrases that were popular at the time. Like if you hear somebody in a movie go, "What's up?" Now you're like, that doesn't make any sense because that is been and gone. That movement is over, like talk to the hand. You know, pandering in that sense. And then there's pandering in... Oh, you know, what's a hot topic right now and that sort of thing. So sometimes pandering...
I mean, you'll get that.
Poorly executed storytelling sometimes comes off as pandering and sometimes there's just blatant. It's there for no reason. And I agree. A long way around of saying, yeah, I agree with Jan that this does it well in the sense of storytelling. It makes sense in the story and it also works as a moral for the story and a whole discussion point is that you're affected by a scene in a movie and you go... How is this happening? Why was this allowed to happen? Which is a much better way of just going, there's a sign on the door that says whites only. And then, oh.
Sad face and then walks away.
Yeah.
What's nice though, is that they learn from each other. So of course, Tony Lip starts out as being really racist and then learns through this experience that actually this is someone who is a person, as you were saying earlier. But also has the same, well, not exactly the same, but has moments where they deal with racism every day. They can kind of, this really nice moment where Tony Lip's like, why do you take it? Like, I would have punched him. It's like, and he talks about how dignity will always prevail. So sometimes you take the shit, but it's because if you lash out, you're the one who will majoritively, because this situation is racist, they will look at you and go, oh, look, another angry black man. And so it's a lot more nuanced, but it means that it's really difficult to watch because you're watching this guy who you grow to love, go through all this shit and he just takes it on the chin. He does drink a lot though.
Mm.
So maybe that's his way of dealing with it. This horrible thing of like, you know, I he speaks like a white man. Who speaks so well.
Something that I think about when I watch movies like this, or even any movie that's talks about like segregation or being a minority, is I don't know how that feels. So I can't. When a movie makes me feel something for that character, because it makes me curious if like we live now. We'll never know what that situation would feel like. So I think that's a really difficult job for a filmmaker to have.
Oh, yeah.
To make you relate to that feeling.
Well, it's relative because here it's actually visible. But as a Scottish person in a huge United Kingdom, you're kind of a small... kind of a minority. So,
well, I guess, but not to the same degree. I mean, I'm not allowed, there's not English only bathrooms and there's not, you know, I can't, there's not a book where I have to stay in Scottish only hotels and whatever. So I mean, in that sense of like real abject, because obviously because of history, we know about segregation in America. Nobody will know what that feels like because that situation, even though there are situations that are not great in the world right now and the quality is far from equal in a lot of cases, nobody will really know what that feels because we weren't around at that time. So I think it's a great achievement for a film to make you feel that. And that's mainly down to, I would say, the performances of the two actors in this film.
Right. Yeah, definitely. The one that comes to mind immediately is when Don Shirley, they break down right next to a field full of slaves.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're not. There wouldn't be slaves. They're workers.
I thought they'd be slaves.
No, slavery is abolished in 1865.
Oh, this is 1962. I'm sorry.
Is abolished in 1865 when the 14th Amendment is changed in the Declaration of Independence, the American Constitution.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be as late as 1960.
1860. I think it's December something. It's 1865 for sure. I will look.
So it's been about 100 years slavery's been abolished, but when they're in the Deep South, there are still working in the fields, and I think the whole thought process behind it is that they are supposed to look like slaves in terms of they are there, they don't want to be there, and they're dirty and there's like an air of, there's a different experience here with Don Shirley coming out of the car while a white man is actually sorting out what's underneath the hood of the car.
Yeah, driving him.
Yeah, while he's in Shirley's in a suit and looks like totally clean and also has an air of like, I own this car and this, etc. And then they see each other and there's a moment of like, this is a lot more complicated than, and that's history right there, because this is a black man who 100 years ago would have been a slave.
So the 13th Amendment is the Constitution abolished slavery and involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime. They first tried to get it passed in April 8th, 1864, but after an unsuccessful vote, they maneuvered it by, it was extended legislative maneuvering by Lincoln. The House tried again the following year in 1865, to which it was ratified by all but three of the Union states, and then eventually by a significant number of border and reconstructed Southern states, so i.e. after the Civil War, as we know them today, reconstructed as the Southern states. So eventually it was passed on December 6, 1865.
So yeah, so it's been about 100 years. I think there's also a generational hate, anger, right? Like, even though you necessarily, well, I mean, of course, in this film, he does go through horrible things, but he's never been a slave, right?
Well, the guy is not immortal.
Yeah, if it was 100 years ago that it was abolished, there's no way he could have been a slave.
Well, he was the first black man to go to a music conservatoire, wasn't it, where he went to?
Yeah. That would have taken a long time. I think it's amazing how we've had this whole thing of like, oh yeah, now the black people are equal, it's going to be the same, and it's like, why would it be the same? Like, these people have come from slavery, they had no education, no land, no background, and that is something that travels through, right? You have to work extra hard to get to somewhere which might have been easier for someone who has parents who are already educated and have access to certain things. I mean, it's so much more nuanced than that. Like, oh, you're free now. And do you know what I mean? So it's like, this would have taken a long time to get to feel like equality.
What we're forgetting as well is that the South lost the Civil War.
Yeah, so they wouldn't have liked this.
So they're not even they're not even united again. Well, even to the extent that when they're in the bar scene, where it's the first extreme case of prejudice that we see, where he's being beaten up, Don's being beaten up, and Tony turns up and says, "You better let him go."
Oh yeah.
And the bartender says, "Get these Yankees out of here," which is a term for the northern states. You know, for the North.
Yeah.
So there's a divide, North and South in America. And then on top of that, you've got a racial divide. And, you know, they think that because the North thinks themselves superior to the South, and, you know, they all have images of each other. So there's a multifaceted layer of just differences between everywhere. And it's quite, it's interesting in Southern films, because what we see is we go around these manors, you know, almost like a glass menagerie or Tennessee Williams. Tennessee's Williams Southern balls. And it's always interesting to see this way of life now. We look at it and go, that is just exist to us. You know, these decadent houses and these large lands and these lavish balls and multitudes of servants and all that sort of pizzazz that only really exists now for royalty, you know?
Yankees, that's interesting. That is how we French call old people from the US.
Do you really?
Yankees, yes. And we call British roast beefs.
Oh, no way.
Not beef eaters, because they actually are a thing.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with...
At the Tower of London.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
That's hilarious. Roast beefs.
Yeah.
That's quite funny. Yankee is obviously the term for, because of North New York, a Yankee. You know, that's where it comes from.
Yankees.
Because the New York Yankees is the baseball team now, but the name descends further back than that.
Right.
You got to love the lovely aspect in there with the letters to Dolores.
Oh, excellent. Lovely.
So sweet. And I like as well, in the end, she's like, thank you for helping with the letter. Because I was also thinking, there is no way that she thinks that this is her husband, because he just one day decides to be a poet. Like, no, there's...
P.S. Kiss the kids.
Exactly. I mean, that is sweet. That is such a sweet little
amendment.
Yeah. I also quite like the way that he kind of sees the world as in face value. You know, he's just like, and now I'm eating eggs, and then this happened, and then a car went, and it's like, I wish my mind worked like that. It'd be so simple.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, Don Shirley then talks, you know, makes it a bit more poetic, and his wife, and I'm guessing their like family friends over Christmas are like, why don't I get a letter? I want a letter like that.
Yeah. Oh, the good old days.
Yeah, like,
of letters, no texts and stuff.
The name of the guy, but hey, where's my letter? Well, when you do dinner, when you do dinner.
When you make me a meal.
Oh, dear.
I'll get you a letter. Yeah.
I did like in the very beginning of the film, we get a very almost homage scene to Goodfellas, you know, with the guy arriving at the table and welcoming people. And like the scene in Goodfellas where Ray Liotta impresses the date by walking through, which famously they had to do the shot where he walks through the kitchen and sees all the staff because they couldn't film at the front door. So they made the shot of going through the back and walking their way through. You know, there was a very similarity of that sort of club, which I quite liked, which I think is intentional because it's introducing to us this world of Italian
ease and convenience.
Ease and convenience and Italian mafioso, sort of like the Italian community.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, because you see this in this film that like, if you wanted a job, you come to me, man. I'll sort you out. That was terrible. But
Anuka's looking for a representation.
So it's very like linked. And if you need something, you talk to my Uncle Bobby and my Frank down the road, et cetera, et cetera.
Down the road, yeah.
They wouldn't say down the road, would they?
Down the block.
Down the block.
He's four blocks over.
Two blocks over, yeah, exactly.
Mickey the Fifth.
And so this kind of shock that anyone would take on this job
or want another lifestyle.
It's very funny how these things come to pass, because it doesn't matter how distinguished, how lovely, how eloquent, intelligent you are, this person, it will never be part of that society. It's so crazy, because it's not even about, yeah, you're all right, I don't like you. It's more that like, I don't like any of you black people. You know, I say that in inverted commas. I didn't say that.
You're quoting from the movie.
Yeah. It's very shocking. How is this a thing? But I think it was really important to see, actually, because I've never seen that. It's more of a feeling or a saying or just ignorance. And so it's nice to see that sort of portrayed on film, that like it was a lot more intense. 100 years after slavery was abolished, a black guy trying to play piano in the deep south, there should be no problems, right?
It's funny because you watch that, you see how they love the performance, and in these moments everything is kind of suspended.
Yeah, that was clever.
There's no, you know, nobody's watching him going, oh, it'd be better if he was a white player. There's no atmosphere of that. And then when he's not playing music, he's just, you know, another one.
Yeah.
In their eyes.
Another part of the help.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
But then just goes to show how ingrained this must have been. Yeah, you were amazing up there. And oh my God, you're so talented. And we will clap you and we'll be so happy that you're here. But don't you dare use our toilets.
It's funny as well, because his Don Shirley, I don't know if it's fact or not, but there's the hint in this film that he was gay.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that scene.
Where they incarcerate him because they find him in the YMCA with another man.
I can't imagine what it would have been like to be black and gay.
Yeah, God almighty. I mean, I quite liked how Tony handles that. He goes, look, I worked in clubs. I get this. Like,
I know that life is complicated.
That part of Don's life, he understands, because that is in his world, and there's a slight connection between them. Like, look, I get it.
Yeah, there's also a slow realization that I might have been wrong about this person.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, there's probably a point where he's like, if I was wrong about that, maybe, you know, I can also understand how someone can be homosexual.
Mm.
I don't know when homosexuality became legal.
Well, after it was deemed to no longer be a mental illness, probably.
Oh, definitely. It might have still been a mental illness, no? After it was found legal? Because mental illness isn't illegal. I don't know. Maybe both of those things changed. It definitely was in 1962 where this is based.
I mean, if you're in God We Trust, if your original laws are based on the Bible, obviously that's illegal. That's what is written in there. So you have to evolve with stuff coming your way.
Yeah. Societally, you have to. And I mean, even now, we still have people, you know, who are anti-abortion for different reasons, but some of it's religious, anti-LGBT. There are only two genders. A lot of it stems from religion and knowing that this was my world for ages. Why can it not stay that way? Why do we need to change these things? And it's like, well, actually, some people feel like they are not part of that group, and that's okay. It takes a long time for society to change, because you can change laws, and that takes a long time, but to change people's minds, are like, that's where the difficulty is.
It's difficult to define in America, because it's what you're trying to find out, whether being that is gay. For example, in Britain, that was the amendment to that was in 1967. That was when that was amended. But in America, I think it's just recently that all states now allow same-sex marriages and stuff like that. So I can't pin...
Marriage is different.
I can't pinpoint that right now.
Marriage is different because marriage wasn't allowed here until a few years ago.
Yes, as a marriage, as well. Not even as a same-sex partnership.
Civil partnership.
Yes.
Allowing homosexuality actually being illegal where people were...
It was jail or castration, I think it was.
Castration?
Chemical castration, yeah. If you not know the case of Alan Turing.
That's horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I knew that, but anyway. So Don Shirley, yeah, it seems like there was a hint of homosexuality. Or even just getting drunk and, I don't know, experimenting?
Who knows?
He doesn't seem the type to experiment.
Well, he was a very lonely guy as well. That's heavily implied. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, definitely. But I think there were certain, what I liked about this film as well is that it wasn't just doom, doom, doom. Like there were moments where actually people's minds could be changed. And this is how you change society as a whole. Because you have, so for example, you have Tony Lip and Dr. John Shirley becoming friends. You also have the last scene where Don Shirley comes to spend Christmas with Tony Lip's family. And of course, there's a lot of prejudice and racist things being said all throughout the film. So you know that there are prejudices in this family anyway. And so you are worried that, you know, for him to come into this environment. And actually, they're like, there's a bit of a silence, but then they're like, oh, let's get a chair. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they don't tell him to fuck off.
Mm.
And so I think that was the film's way of saying, like there are good people, especially with the police officer that then lets them go. And his whole thing is like, is there a problem? Like, I'm going to have a bit of attitude because I know, you know, what police officers can be like. And he's like, yeah, did you not know that this is illegal?
I think it was an interesting way of showing that they actually switched from the southern part to, again, the northern part to be arrested the second time.
I didn't know that he was a Northern American, a police officer. I thought he was just a nice guy.
Yeah, I took the nice guy was the one in the prison, the young one. But I'm pretty sure that the last one meant that they actually were already back in the north.
Well, right. Snowing for a start.
Right. Because the police officer was like, actually, you know, he is allowed to have a... Why is he in this prison?
Yeah, he has rights.
He has rights. Oh, yeah, that's the line. He has rights. And they're like, oh, fuck's sake. Obviously didn't want that to happen.
And that famous scene then, but who the hell did he call?
Yes. Brilliant.
Yeah, that you see often, this one. But yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, it shows his influence, doesn't it? As a man, it's amazing.
Something else about the film that I found interesting was the fact that I could see a journey going on.
Right.
In both senses, there's a literal journey in the film, going south. But there's also, you can see the gear shifting. I don't know, maybe it's because we're coming off Roma, which is super subtle, the gear changes. I didn't necessarily mind that I could see this story taking places and places, because I was in on it. I was going with it.
Yeah. And it could go either way, right? Like this could be really bad or really good. Like you didn't know in a way where it was going. It was exciting.
I also think this film is very accessible.
Oh yeah.
For anyone. It's a very, because it's a comedy. I don't know if it's defined as a comedy, but there's definitely many laughs in this.
Yeah, it's lighthearted. I was laughing the whole way through.
Yeah, it's great because you can just jump in and you can go on this story that does handle other issues if we've talked at length about this episode. Because that's what stuck with us as well. Basically, the fact that it's a comedy makes it more accessible because although there are deeper themes that we've discussed at length here, we wouldn't be discussing these if the film didn't accurately make us think about it, you know, on top of being a comedy. Comedy drama, okay. Which is good because I thought it was a bit of both, yeah. And when we get to the final confrontation of like when the straw that breaks the camel's back and the last show and the whole like, fuck it attitude, it's like, well, never mind. That feels earned, you know, because we've been on the journey too. It doesn't just feel like, oh, you're throwing in the towel at the last minute. As an audience, we're with it because we've been through every sort of night and we've seen the back and forth and we know who this character is. And when it comes to being like, look, you can perform in this room, but you can't eat dinner in it. You're just like, all right, enough's enough. You know, like at some point you go, nah, forget it.
Yeah. And you're totally rooting for him when he's like, well, I'm leaving, you know, because he's taken so much stuff and he's been distinguished and amazing the whole trip. And then the last bit, you're like, something's going to give. And he does, he leaves. He's like, I eat here in this room or I'm not eating in this whole establishment.
Or I'm not performing. Yeah, I'm not performing.
Or I'm not performing, exactly.
We went on a very effective and strong journey from prejudice and hate to a strong friendship.
Yeah.
In 130 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing to watch, actually. Daphne would say this film was a success.
Do I think it'll win Best Picture? I don't think so. Although stranger things have happened. I said this when we left the cinema. I went, you know, Forrest Gump won Best Picture.
Yeah.
And the lightheartedness, this has an air of the lightheartedness that Forrest Gump had, you know. And it was addressing separate issues and the same issues in different degrees, you know. And here we're addressing issues in a lighthearted way as well, which Forrest Gump would definitely be defined as a comedy drama. So the genre itself isn't necessarily immediately, yeah, you're not going to win. I think he has a really strong chance at supporting actor. I really do think he's got I think he's got an excellent chance with this performance.
We haven't seen all of the nominations though.
No, that's
so
true.
So I don't even know what other films could win.
Well, I'm curious to see Richard E. Grant.
Yeah, can you ever forgive me?
And can you ever forgive me? I'm very interested to see that.
That should be interesting.
And then Adam Driver is up for Black Klansman as well.
I haven't seen that yet.
No.
But I've only heard good things and it sounds like something that I'd really like to watch.
Do you like,
great idea.
Do you like Spike Lee?
I do.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
You're in for a treat then. Do we have anything else on Green Book?
No.
Not necessarily?
No.
I really did enjoy it and I felt the fact that it's made us have these conversations is a great achievement for a comedy drama as well. And I like at last that Jan has found a piece that didn't pander. And actually, because I know Jan has trouble with especially with Vitonia last year, about a film just like ramming it down your throat.
I'll talk about when we arrive to the rating. I'll have a few more points, but yeah.
All right. Well, if we've not got anything else to add, I mean, may as well go into the rating. Was Green Book good, bad, or just plain standard? Anouk?
It was good. I really, really enjoyed it. And I totally agree. Like, I think it's so important that we talk about these things from what happened, but also what people went through then and also now and hopefully not in the future, like how to change it. So on that standpoint, it's really good. But also it was super entertaining. So as like an entertaining film, to do both. Yeah, I agree. It was so good. So if you haven't seen it, which you should.
Yeah.
When the film was finished, when I saw that at the start of December, I was like, yes, at last. Thank you. So yeah, good. Very, very high good. That's how I think a very good way to treat the subject, either like this or completely absurd, like Sorry to Bother You. I prefer these two approaches and what Daryl Davis is doing with the black man attending Ku Klux Klan rallies. I prefer those type of approaches to actually what you get with Black Klansmen.
Okay.
Yeah, which is, it ends with stuff saying that Trump is a racist and stuff like that. That's a bit too heavy-handed for me. Yeah, this one goes very high in the good. Green Book. It's also the name of the political manifesto of Gaddafi, the Green Book.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Funny.
Wholeheartedly and with a warm smile on my face. Mm. Please watch this.
Definitely.
I echo both points. I think sometimes when you see a film up for Best Picture, you immediately go, oh, I bet that's a slog. I don't want to compare it to Roma. I'm not complaining quality-wise. Pacing is a different as a genre, but it's an extremely well-paced, enjoyable, great time. So it's a very high good for me. I'm glad it's nominated. It's a nice piece of cinema. It's nice to see that something that handles the subject in this way and have some great performances. I've seen a few reviews of it that say it's an average movie with some great performances that outshine it. If you've got great acting in a movie, I mean, that's instantly going to bring it up to a decent level. So this is a good one for me. This is a good category. Yeah, I agree with both of you.
Yeah, I think some people watch it as something that's lighthearted and they might confuse that with like, meh, it was an all right story, when actually you found it entertaining and actually it will stick with you.
Like, even though it's heavy themes, I would put also that in the same category as Chef, feel-good movie, kind of.
Yeah, it is feel-good. Heavy themes, feel-good film, which is super hard to do. So actually, I don't think it's all to do with the actors. I think there's definitely, because with the jelly beaning and those balancing those two things out is difficult, man.
Mm. Peter Farrelly has a nice track record of those.
It certainly looks that way.
Definitely.
Now is we have 5 minutes to talk about stuff. I actually have a few things.
Ooh.
Go for it.
I just learned that Ultraviolet will shut its doors in July.
Oh,
you know, when you bought a DVD or a Blu-ray, you had a little purple card with a code.
Oh, yeah.
So that will close its doors.
Oh, no.
So you'll have to connect. Yeah, I have 110 movies in that library.
Oh.
But they're connected on some other retailers, so that should work fine.
Okay, good.
Solo, A Star Wars Story just arrived on Netflix.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah.
Already? Yeah, that's not a good sign.
That is not a good sign.
Wait, that's like 11 months. I mean, today is the 1st of February to date this, 7 days to my birthday.
Well, but even though, like, Roma, wasn't it 3 weeks and then onto Netflix?
I think that was the plan, though, right?
So this wasn't the plan?
No, like, of course not. No.
Yeah, so they wanted cinema.
Do you think they want that on there quickly? Because I mean, Rogue One is already on Netflix, and they've now got Solo because this is the year of Episode 9
and Disney Plus.
Oh yes, that's true, isn't it?
Who knows? I noticed a few days ago actually that now VPNs can work with Netflix.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, because you need a license some browsers don't have.
To
be able to watch actually with a US server to be able to actually watch Solo.
I go to Germany a lot, and there's quite a lot of things that I want to show my mum, but I can't because I'm in Germany. So it would be nice to bring over my laptop and be like, oh yeah, like, you can see this on Netflix, in British Netflix.
In the Iceland episode, Paul said he worked on the Magician's show. So I finally had a go at it. It's on Prime. And I got to say, it's quite addictive.
Oh, nice.
Really?
It's not for kids. It says on the web, it says 15, but on Prime, actually, I think it says 18, which is a bit weird, but definitely not for kids.
Okay.
That might be American, British.
We 15 only exists in Britain. America's got their own system. We do the age number.
Yeah, so maybe in America, it's 18.
So like rated R.
Do they not have 18?
No. It's like...
NC-17.
NC-17, rated R. PG-13. They have a different rating system. We've got U, PG, 12A, 15, 18.
Yeah.
18 plus.
And then X.
Sorry. That's really right.
In Iceland, we talked about mental health a bit. And also, we had an 8 minutes bit in the Bandersnatch the following week. I'll just add now to crush this whole comparing yourself sentiment that Prunella on York or, well, I don't remember what the name is of
Gary is mine.
Gary?
Gary's mine.
Something that has always worked so far since August 2017 for me. When I see something on Twitter that really annoys me, I'll go edit an episode or take notes for future podcast ideas or anything productive related to the podcast. Thus, I am glad to inform you guys that we currently have on the iMac Anna with Alan and Tommy, Roma, Ed Fringe 2018, and the Wing of the Thigh in need of a good unblocking.
Yes. I have depression. The reason why I'm saying this is because sometimes I have a really bad day and I honestly cannot get out of bed. And Adam said to me, watch a film. Spend the whole day watching films and taking notes. So you're not doing anything, but you feel productive. And actually, sometimes I'll watch one film and be strong enough to get out of bed and do something that I, like an hour and a half before, would be like, no fucking way, I'm moving at all this whole week. So actually, sometimes just moving your, like doing something that you can do, takes the small steps to be like, oh, actually, I'm strong enough to do anything. I'm just going to walk outside, etc.
It's a mental shift. I think realizing yourself that you're doing something productive, even though you don't know it, is a great step. And acknowledging the little minor victories you have is also a great step.
Yeah.
For instance,
yeah.
You last night, we watched The Big Short, and you usually hate watching new things. You have a distinct hatred of this, not going to the cinema, but because of your anxiety and the way your brain is, you don't like what could new experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you sat and watched the whole of The Big Short and wasn't enthralled by it is a great step, and it's a good step forward.
I like to write those down. Like sometimes even just the littlest thing, like I brushed my teeth today. Like something really simple is like silly, but actually when you're in that mindset of like I can't do anything, it's like so amazing to like look down that list and be like, actually I have done something today. I'm not useless, basically.
It's funny, in the family episode, my brother at some point makes a joke, like I was talking about how, he was talking about how I came to his place sometimes to do some painting, but I never did the painting because I was depressed. And but he was always pushing me like, be productive, do stuff now, either taking notes or actually going to, and when I, that's immediate, there's Twitter crap. Okay, I have four episodes. I'm late for four episodes. Let's go to one. Two new things, and then I think we're done. I removed our 10-minute production meeting from the actual Bandersnatch episode. But as Patreon had that, I'll just add now that when there are episodes, movies that are really important that you watch them before, I'll put an image in there. Just like now we have a minute of one-on-one stuff before each episode. The image will be of the Spoil Yourself website. That was a few years ago, Netflix launched a website. You press the button and you would spoil yourself high-profile series that was on Netflix.
Oh, wow.
Oh, amazing.
That's quite good.
Okay.
Yeah, the ending, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Isolani episode when Jenny, Paul told us, then Jenny asked him about the review he had not read before, the nerve-wracking performance, for which he wasn't sure what it meant, if it was a good thing?
Oh, yeah.
And it was indeed my review.
Was it? Okay.
Yes.
Ah, it's awesome.
That's funny. If you fancy, come to see me on a wonderful piece, actually. It's really well written. By the director and our friend who did Nothing. On the 27th of February at the Old Hairdressers in Glasgow at 8 p.m. It's not a showcase thing. It's like there'll be a performance of a piece and then there'll be a break so you can go to the bar and relax. And then you go back and see the next piece and so forth. So it's like it's a showcase, but it's not like you sit and watch the whole thing. It's staggered.
It's very chill.
Very chill. So if you're in the Glasgow area, fancy come to see some interesting pieces of theatre, some new writing. I don't even know what the other pieces are yet, but they sound interesting.
You'll find out on the 11th. Anyway.
It's called Melting, and it's by Fay Theatre. Come and have a watch. It'll be good.
I'll be in France, unfortunately.
Damn.
Oh, shame.
Never mind. But if anyone else listening is in Glasgow and fancies something to do on a Wednesday evening, if they've not got anything on, come along. It'll be a good night. Ask us about the podcast.
Yeah.
Give us a movie to review. We'll do it. All right. Sweet.
Thanks for listening. numbers are steadily, that keeps being steady.
Yeah, we're doing, 20,000 is fast approaching.
So cool. Thank you so much, everyone who's listened, reviewed. So, so cool.
I know you hear it at the beginning of every episode, each one of us telling you to review, but it does help us out a little bit each time
we
get a review and whatever. We'd love to break the top 200 for film and TV in the UK this year.
Please.
Hoping, even if we were 200, it would be amazing. Thanks a lot. So.
Thank you so much.
Merci.
Merci.
Merci. Dankeschön.
We were
Adam.
Anouk.
And Jan. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Good, the Bad, and the Just Plain Standard podcast. If you like what you heard, you can leave us a review via iTunes. If you want to keep up to date with what we're doing, you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Good, Bad, Standard Podcast on both platforms. If you fancy seeing the live streams that we talk about on the podcast, they can be found on YouTube.com. You search for Milk in a Wine Glass. There are other bits and bobs on there too, just to see what Jan's up to during the week. And if you really like us, like really, really like us, why don't you head on over to patreon.com/goodbadstandardpodcast and have a look if you want to support us. Any small donation is appreciated.